listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Are you the spirit which Jacob Marley foretold would visit me? And I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come, am I not? About to show me the shadows of the things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so? I fear you. More than any specter I have seen.
That's a scene from one of the many film adaptations of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Now, in the original, we don't know much about Ebenezer Scrooge and his religious views. He interacts with these spirits that are sent to him all in a single night, and by the end of the story, he is no longer the man he once was. But what if Ebenezer Scrooge were, well, to put it in 21st century parlance, merely a pragmatic skeptic? What if he were an atheist? Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about Charles Dickens' Scrooge and the existence of God. Steve Loring will join us a little bit later. We'll go into some of the breaking news about the Justice Department's investigation into fetal tissue transfers and sales by abortion providers, including Planned Parenthood. Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life, will be our guest. And then we'll spend some time with Jennifer Law, president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture Network. We'll talk about a congressman's resignation over alleged statements about surrogacy. Joining us to talk about Charles Dickens' Scrooge and the existence of God, Steve Loring. He's a Lutheran layman, a married father of three children in Troy, Michigan, author of the new book, Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence. Steve, welcome to Issues Etc.
Todd, I want to sincerely say thank you for having me. As a regular listener to the podcast, I want you to know that you have developed my Christian worldview. So thank you for that, and thank you for having me on.
Well, we are happy to do it. I don't think there's anybody, people might get sick of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol because it is so oft repeated, like some of those classic movies shown on television. But most everybody deeply appreciates the story. What did Dickens understand, especially in the character of Scrooge? What did he understand about unbelieving man?
Well, first of all, I'm one who's never sickened of A Christmas Carol or It's a Wonderful Life. You know, you get them once a year, and it hasn't happened to me yet, but I understand what you're saying. But as far as your question about unbelieving man and how Dickens viewed him, I think part of the genius of Dickens in this story is that he viewed people, unbelieving man, as redeemable. And as bad as we may be at times as individuals, Scrooge was somehow always just a little bit worse and a little more cold-hearted than everybody else. And to see such an epic transformation of somebody like Scrooge, to have it happen, you know, so believably all in one night, I think is a real inspiration to the people that know and love the story.
Do you think that Dickens himself understood Scrooge as either a man of profound doubt or a man of unbelief?
Well, I think a lot of what happens in A Christmas Carol is subtle and implied. It's not a theological treatise. It's very much, you know, a story that, you know, strikes at our feelings and our hearts. And it's a story with a lot of human characters. And so I feel like what he explicitly meant to do as far as theology and unbelief, that stays slightly off, you know, under the radar.
For those who may not, there may be a few who are not familiar with the general plot of the original story and the one that you worked from. How does it go?
Well, it starts with Scrooge, and he's a cold-hearted, greedy miser And by the end of the story, he's been transformed, as most know, into a benevolent, joy-filled, Christmas-loving old man. And along the way, you know, the means for this transformation are visits from his old partner, you know, 7 years dead, Jacob Marley, and who warns him of the three ghosts that are going to visit him. The ghosts are the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. And they take him on a journey that involves his own life, including his supposed destiny, you know, including his own gravestone. And they wake up that redeemable part of Scrooge, you know, in one fantastic night. Now, with that as the overview of the original Scrooge and the question of God's existence, you know, why I even did it in the first place was to take some of the life-changing, you know, Christian apologetics that I've been studying and take Scrooge on a slightly different journey from one of skepticism and doubt to the owner of a reasonable faith, the owner of a reasonable Christian faith.
So this is the slight twist you've put on this is Scrooge simply isn't a man who may be an unbeliever. In your retelling, he is a skeptic. He is an unbeliever.
Yeah, he's explicitly an atheist. He's an unbeliever. He's very hard-nosed and scholarly, and he doesn't have a problem with greed. He has a problem with pride, skepticism, doubts, and he has a problem with the pain that's occurred to him during the course of his life. Frankly, if God actually does exist, he hates him, and that's his starting point. But it's not an irredeemable starting point.
Talk about then your version of that first visitation that comes from his old business partner, Jacob Marley.
Right. Well, Scrooge assumes that his old colleague, you know, Jacob Marley, died an unbeliever. He was an outspoken skeptic as well, and he's visited by his ghostly past colleague, and he has trouble believing that he's seeing a ghost in the first place, because we're talking about someone that is not believing in the supernatural. So he dismisses him as a hallucination. Although Marley delivers the warning, he obliges and disappears. But that's not the end of the story. The ghosts or the spirits make their visit irregardless, without his consent or buy-in. He's taken on this journey that he does not want to go on, a very painful journey through his past. And, you know, it all starts with the ghost of Christmas past. And Scrooge has had some hard things in his life. It starts with his father leaving his family when he's a child. And then it continues on with his mother dying of cancer just a few years later. And without giving away too many of the details of the story, you can understand before too long why this person would ask why of God. And it's something that eventually all of us ask. And the goal of the book is to help a person both intellectually and emotionally or spiritually with those very tough questions. So the book is light and whimsical in places, but gets deadly serious as I can be in other parts, to try to give serious, heartfelt questions to the problem of evil and suffering in the world.
There is a point in that encounter with what Scrooge believes to be a hallucination of Jacob Marley, where he asks, "What are you here for?" What's the response that Marley gives Scrooge?
Your reclamation. He tells him, I'm here for your reclamation.
Let's talk about the first ghost that visits after Marley departs, and that is the ghost of Christmas past. What doubt in particular, or what aspect of unbelief does this ghost highlight for the character?
Well, it's, as I mentioned before, it's really the problem of evil and suffering, which comes up throughout the book.
Talk a little bit more about that. How does it manifest itself in the the character of Scrooge?
The character of Scrooge goes from being, you know, devastated as a child to all these unthinkable, painful things that happen to him, to becoming hardened and callous. And he also discovers his gifts, which are, you know, he's a brilliant thinker. And, you know, his intellect is a gift from God, but as with any gift, you can use it for for good, to God's glory, or for evil. And he uses that gift to draw attention to himself, to be provocative, and as a way of fulfilling his prideful needs. And we see that as he goes from being a child to a young man at college, that he becomes this very respected, uber intellectual skeptic. And the more ridicule he can heap on the faith, the more attention it gets him. And that kind of drives a cycle for this particular character.
It becomes his identity, the skeptic, the unbeliever, doesn't it?
In this case, yes, it does. And as I was writing the story, the Scrooge character is an extreme example. And the error that can be made here is to generalize and stereotype, to say that all atheists or all skeptics are prideful and arrogant. That would be obviously an error. But in the case of Scrooge, for the sake of telling a story, I think that the reader can imagine at least one such atheist.
As the ghost of Christmas Past departs, has Scrooge, we talk about this transformation, has he realized anything about his unbelief?
Well, he's realized things because it's been put plain before his eyes. The power of going back and seeing your past just as it was and feeling just the way it was when it happened is certain things become undeniable. But at that point in the story, he's not conceding a single thing. All right. He doesn't like what he sees. He wants to be taken back. And so the process has just begun. Like the stone is in his shoe and it's beginning to bother him.
Steve Loring is our guest. We're talking about Charles Dickens' Scrooge and the existence of God. When we come back, it'll be the Ghost of Christmas Present. What aspect of Scrooge's unbelief does he address?
Answering objections defending the faith, evolution or creation, transgenderism and homosexuality. These are some of the issues addressed at the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 3rd at Faith Lutheran Church in San Antonio, Texas. Learn more at worldviewsa.org. This conference features issues that center a guest, Dr. Jan Lohmeyer and Pastor David J. Weber. The San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 3rd, worldviewsa.org.
This holiday shopping season, skip the Fruit of the Month Club. Don't fall for any ridiculous as-seen-on-TV offers. Just say no to ugly sweaters. Instead, give your family and friends the best of Lutheran reflection on faith and life, theology and culture, delivered monthly right to their mailboxes. Give them the Lutheran Witness magazine. Visit cph.org/witness to purchase subscriptions for Christmas or anytime. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Comfort, comfort, ye my people, for unto us a child is born, good news of great joy, the titles of Christ, the Magnificat. These are some of the Christmas card themes produced by Ad Crucem. Send a greeting card this Christmas season that's centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ. AdCrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com, AdCrucem.com.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
Let us love till we die, and God bless us everyone.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Charles Dickens' Scrooge and the existence of God. Steve Loring is our guest. He's author of a new book, Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence, recasting Scrooge in the familiar tale as a skeptic and an atheist. Moving on to the Ghost of Christmas Present, what aspect of Scrooge's unbelief does this specter highlight, Steve?
Well, with For Ghost of Christmas Present, the secondary theme of the story temporarily steps into the forefront. It has to do with the relationship between Scrooge and Bob Cratchit. Now, you'll know from the original Christmas Carol, Bob Cratchit was Scrooge's clerk, and Scrooge oppressed him. Since greed was the theme of the original, he oppressed him by not paying him well and working him too hard and depriving his family of him, almost even on Christmas Day. That wasn't going to work for this retelling because we're talking about problems of skepticism and pride and not so much problems of greed. And so I remade the Cratchit character. And I did that with lots of fear and trepidation to tinker too much with the original. But the new Cratchit is a pastor, and he's speaking his conscience about certain moral issues in the culture. Specifically, there's a hypothetical group called Love Without Limits. And he's saying, no, there are limits. God has limits, moral limits on what is okay and what's not okay. And he's speaking openly about this. So Scrooge is set out to limit the free speech of people that are speaking according to their religion and according to their conscience, by relabeling it as hate speech, bigoted hate speech. And so Bob Cratchit finds himself in the crosshairs of this new law. He's on his way to being charged with breaking a hate speech law and, you know, potentially being sent away to prison. So that's the subplot. Again, it came right out of the idea that Scrooge needs to persecute Bob Cratchit in some way. And in this story, Scrooge is trying to rid the world of religion. And so that was the lever I chose to pull to make that part of the story happen. And I think it fits in with what we're seeing in our culture today.
There's a truth here, an insight into the nature of atheism. Atheism is very seldom passive. You don't meet a lot of passive atheists. They feel impelled to fight against something that they will tell you with a straight face doesn't exist, and those who believe in it. There's some kind of an impulse to fight against both God and those who believe in God. Talk about that.
And that's absolutely self-defeating, right? So if you take away an objective lawgiver, you have no source for objective laws that you expect everybody else to acknowledge, just like yourself. And I think C.S. Lewis most famously pointed this out, that, you know, without an objective lawgiver, you have no basis for objective law, and things kind of disintegrate to your preference and my preference. Yet, because of what you mentioned, it's really, as St. Paul says, it's written on our hearts that we have this moral law. We have our conscience at work. People do it anyway. They do it even if it's in contradiction of the worldview they're trying to declare.
By the time the Ghost of Christmas Future appears, it seems as though maybe the Scrooge character is beginning to catch on slightly what's happening here, isn't it?
Yeah. Just one more quick thing about the Ghost of Christmas Present. One of the things he does, a very Lutheran thing I think that he does, is he holds up a mirror with special powers, a mirror that shows him the unrepented sin of a long life of a very, you know, hardened and prideful man. And the image that he sees in that mirror is like the law and the law and gospel equation. And this, as much as anything, prepares Scrooge in this story to have a change of heart. So it would only be half a story if Scrooge and the question of God's existence only achieved a change of mind, you know, a change of opinion for Scrooge without getting him to, you know, metaphorically bend the knee. And so that's another key piece of The Ghost of Christmas Present. That's one of his big jobs.
Why do you think that Dickens in the original chose that this final ghost, the ghost of Christmas yet to come, would remain largely silent?
That is a good question. And you know, a lot of these questions that relate to the mind of Dickens, I'm completely inadequate to answer. whatever he did, he did it right. I mean, the Ghost of Christmas Future is a Grim Reaper type of character. There's so much about what happens when we die that is a profound mystery, aside from what we know from Scripture, that the silence, I think, is consistent with that, and it kind of evokes the mystery of death, that type of thing. So I think it's a very powerful choice that Dickens made to keep the Ghost of Christmas Future silent.
What does, in your version, what does that final ghost show Scrooge?
Well, there's two things that happen with the, there's more than two, but two very important things that I'd like to highlight with the Ghost of Christmas Future that happen in my story. One is what I would characterize as the great debate. This is where if Scrooge has a mind and a heart problem as it relates to belief and, as it relates to faith, the great debate is where the mind problem comes to a head. It's a real climax in that sense. And, I'd like to keep at least a few things of mystery for the potential future reader as to how a ghost that does not speak, as you just mentioned, how within the context of that segment of the story, a great debate occurs. But needless to say, one happens. And again, I'd view that as a climax of the story. The second thing that happens is that in the most raw and personal and unveiled way that I could think of, I had Scrooge confront his own mortality. And at some point in the book, there's the comment that one of the characters makes, what do we really know about a man's dying thoughts? When there's no one to talk to, no one to call out to, does man just make yet one last banal joke when there's no one to laugh? And so, Scrooge is at the end, and his wit and his, cutting jokes and his skepticism and his pride have been stripped away, and there's nothing that he has left to cling to, and that's what's going on in the last ghost chapter as well.
So, without giving too much away, how is it then that at the end, this man who has made his whole character, his whole reason to be, skepticism, how does he encounter, finally, the God that he has denied?
I'm afraid that would give it quite a bit away. I would just suffice it to say that there is, implicitly, we know that it's the Holy Spirit at work. But he, once he has the rubbish cleared away from the church door, as Paul Meyer would put it, once his intellectual problems are taken care of, it's just him and what's in his heart when he's faced with his creator.
In a lot of ways, this isn't actually fiction, at least in the basic telling of it. Many people who have devoted their lives to being skeptics, to being even atheists, at some point through life circumstances, and as you have said there, through the Holy Spirit's use of that word that once planted is very, very difficult to uproot, are brought to faith. What message do you want to send to a skeptic who reads your book?
Well, for the skeptic, I would want to say that the way the believers in the story approach the skeptic, they do it with grace. They work within their limits of their influence. They have a relationship that they're interested in strengthening with the unbeliever, and they show real concern for the unbeliever. And I hope through the example and witness of those characters that the skeptic reading the book would feel like they're seeing hopefully an accurate, if not an idealistic, portrayal of Christian witnessing, and ideally, opening them up to, the apologetics and the gospel message, which is, embedded in the story.
Steve Luring is a Lutheran layman, a married father of three children in Troy, Michigan, and author of the new book, Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence. You can purchase it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Steve, thank you very much.
Thank you for the time, and I'd be remiss if I didn't give a quick thank you to Dr. Paul Meyer He did me the honor of writing the foreword to the book, and even more, he did some editing for it as well, and so I'm indebted for his support. Well, thanks again.
When we come back, Carol Tobias will join us, president of National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk about the Justice Department's investigation into fetal tissue transfers by abortion providers, including Planned Parenthood.
This is a strategic retreat. It's not leaving the battlefield completely, but it's going to where we can rebuild ourselves for the long war ahead. It's a retreat no more than the British Army retreated at Dunkirk.
Rod Dreher speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And the England I speak of, the metaphorical England, are our churches and our communities, which are not completely safe any more than England was safe. Thank God for the Royal Air Force. But it's relative safety. It's where we can do the hard work we need to do, not only to survive the current moment and the current crisis, but to prepare to take the battle to the enemy when the opportunities present itself.
You can listen to Rod Dreher's presentation, Making the Case for the Benedict Option, on an audio DVD of the 2017 Making the Case conferences. We'll send it to you for a year-end tax-deductible contribution of $300. Just click the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan, gathers to receive our Lord's gifts in word, baptism, and supper every Sunday morning at 9:15. Bible study at 11. Join us at 4219 Park Lane in Door, or visit us on the web, epiphanydoor.org. Christ-centered, cross-focused, historic, confessional, liturgical, Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan, epiphanydoor.org, 616-681-0791.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Are you concerned that nativity scenes aren't being displayed in public places? Why not display one at your church or your home? The Outdoor Nativity Store produces durable, affordable, and American-made outdoor nativities for Christians around the world. To view a variety of nativity sets, visit OutdoorNativityStore.com. These nativities will hold up under the harshest weather conditions, snow, ice, and wind. The Outdoor Nativity Store, OutdoorNativityStore.com.